Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wagon Wheel Podcast, presented to you by Bills Wire at USA Today, SMG. My name is Matt Johnson, your host, and alongside with me every single week, David, and we are in a big, happy mood right now. The Buffalo Bills, AFC East champions for the first time since 1995. David, you're looking giddy with excitement right now. How are you feeling, bud?
I'm so happy, Matt. You know, you and I talk about Peyton Manning a bit here and there. We talk about the Colts because I know you're a devout fan.
I am.
And I know you know how this feels. I know how you know how this feels because of the success that they had under Manning. And, you know, it's just been a little longer for us. That's all. It's just been a while.
Worth the wait? Worth the wait?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is incredible. The Bills win the AFC East for the first time since 1995, the year before Josh Allen was born. I mean, how poetic is that, right? Right? Like the child of which, you know, the sports gods foretold was born and, you know, like grew up and became a quarterback or something funny like that, right?
Right.
But yeah, he had a big day. I mean, he went 28 for 40 with 359 passing, two touchdowns with those arms and two with his legs. So he continues to pad that new franchise record for total touchdowns in a season. He had his 12th game with a passing and a rushing touchdown since 2019, which leads the NFL. He now has 4,000 passing yards on the season and is on pace to break Drew Bledsoe's franchise record for yards in a season throwing, which is 4,359 in 2002. So, you know, 359 yards to go over two games. That's within reach for Allen, as is Jim Kelly's single season passing touchdown record of 33 in 1991. Allen is now at, I believe, 30 after throwing for a couple today. Jim Kelly tweeted after the game, "Congrats, men, job well done and earned. Let's keep it going. We're not done yet. Let's go, Buffalo. AFC's champions." So I feel great. I'm sure a lot of Bills fans do as well. And I'll tell you what, you know, I do my best to manage expectations, right?
Absolutely.
I'm a very optimistic, hopeful person. I'm a big passionate Bills fan. I love growing up watching the Jim Kelly Bills. And so I do try to kind of temper, right, and manage expectations. So I'm trying not to take this for granted, though. That's why I'm so excited.
You have every right to be. You have every right to be. And the reason why I asked, like, was it worth the wait? Because, you know, teams win on all sorts of weird, different circumstances.
You know,
they have to win. Another team has to lose at just the right exact time for them to win a championship. You wait till week 17 to win an AFC, you know, to win a division championship. But this has been one of the most dominant, like, turnarounds ever. And, like, I mean, I can go on and on about how cool it would have been for them to dethrone a Brady Pats team last year. But, I mean, it doesn't matter. The past is the past. This is this is here and now. And this is the start of something very, very special. You know, and I really going forward, this team is built for the long haul. We've talked about this before. It's built for the long haul. And just, I mean, the way it was done, the whole road to it was very, very special. And you see this team coming into its own, you know, it's with its ceiling very, very high. And like, yeah, it's exciting that they're AFC's champions, but this isn't the be all end all, right? Like this is a cool, like, if you're playing, we're talking video games, like a little bonus, you know, objective. But, you know, the fact that this team does this and is on pace to be a Super Bowl contender is,
right,
you know, it's phenomenal. It's really cool. The way that they played today, I mean, they were dominant. You know, I, again, had a hard time picking a player of the week, but it was like, you know, how do I not pick Stephon Diggs, who killed it? But another great team win. I think that's what I really want. The point I want to drive across today is another great team win. You know, that's what this team has been about this last month and a half since the Arizona game. It's been about team wins. It's not been about superstars, and they have a lot to hang their hat on tonight. I've said on the show before, I am not a Bills fan really by any means. I support them because they're local, but congrats to the Bills and Bills fans. Honestly, you guys deserve it for the last 20 years, you know, and I'll ask 25 years that you guys have endured, you know, heartbreaking losses, poor management, bad coaching. It's been a lot, and I'm just glad to see all the good things kind of come. The karma, I guess, kind of come back all in bunches. So, you know, this is it's a good feeling. Euphoric. I can already, as soon as it happened, I heard like fireworks going off in the neighborhood that I record out of, like after they got the win, somebody pounding downstairs in one of the other office spaces. So, people are definitely excited here, and that's always a good thing. I like when seeing people happy. So, Lord knows Buffalo fans deserve it.
It's okay, Matt. I think you're a good Buffalo fan. If it's any consolation, I think that even though they're not your first team, I love the way that you've embraced them and welcomed them into your heart. So thank you for that. And, you of know, course. I love I'd be what a, you said I'd, about it.
Yeah, I'd be a bad just general fan if I was like that. I don't know. I just like seeing people find happiness through football. And for Buffalo fans, it's a way of life, I guess. It's a personality trait in some cases, for better or for worse. But, you know, it's cool. I can find a reason to be happy for everybody, but to kind of see it firsthand, it's really cool. Just let people be happy. And you know, I've had my moments as a Colts fan. Let's just say that. I've had my moments, and Bills definitely deserve theirs. So.
Well, it surely is a moment. It was a good game too. I love what you said about it being a team win. Something that you and I have been chatting about here and there over the course of the season is how wins are not a single position stat. You know, wins are not a quarterback stat. They're not, they're earned by teams. And we've seen that on numerous occasions in different ways, but you're absolutely right about that. People really chipped in, did their part. And it was a really awesome day. I think that I think there were some really significant kind of contributions, little bits here and there by different guys, and then big bits here and there by different guys. You know, Allen and Denver quarterback Drew Lock are friends from working out with Jordan Palmer in the offseason. We didn't have John Brown again in this game. He came off injured reserve this week but did not play. So, you know, I was wondering, hey, would this be a competitive, maybe a little bit of a shootout, depending on how the Bills defense played, but it just wasn't meant to be. You know, Allen has now had his seventh 300-yard game this season, which ties Drew Bledsoe's franchise record of seven games in 2002. That's another record that he could be poised to surpass possibly in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Also, this is fun. There's been a lot of comparisons between the numbers because overall Josh Allen has better numbers. Players with 30 passing touchdowns and 8 rushing touchdowns in a single season, there's only two. Josh Allen in 2020 and Cam Newton in his MVP season in 2015. It's very interesting that the quarterback play around, you know, three or four guys this year is good enough where we're not outright talking about how Allen's numbers mostly surpass Newton's in his MVP season.
Certainly.
You know, those guys playing MVP caliber ball. Diggs had 147 yards receiving on 11 catches of 13 targets. Beasley added 112 yards receiving on 8 catches and 10 targets. They're the first Bills duo to do that since 2010 when Stevie Johnson and Lee Evans did. This is awesome. You know, like there's little things like that. Right.
Yeah.
Moss added 81 yards on the ground. Ed Oliver got his third sack of the year. So guys really chipped in and did their part.
They did. Even we got to see a little bit of Dawson Knox today, a little bit of Lee Smith. And there's another tight end of the team that we didn't know about. Well, actually, I didn't know about. But he got a play. What's his name? It starts with an E.
Jake Tomorrow?
Kimmerow, or whatever.
Kimmerow, that's right.
Yeah. That's what it is. My fault. He came out. I didn't know he was a thing. And so, like I said, that's been the thing because throughout the last, I'll even go back as far as 3 years. All right, the last 3 years of the Sean McDermott regime, You know, it's been one side bailing out the other. And this is why this is the emphasis on the team victory, why this is so important, right? It's, oh, the defense played really good and the offense did just enough. Or in the first half of the season, this defense played really bad, but good thing we have a good offense. Now it's complimentary football, week in, week out. And that's how you win, like, that's how you win championships. It is. You know, you take a look across the National Football League, at least in the AFC, right? That's what we're focusing on this here on out. We have two AFC opponents left, and we are going into a AFC exclusive postseason right now, obviously, until the Super Bowl. What teams are playing like that right now?
Right.
What teams are playing like that? Kansas City, I would say, is not even playing team football right now. I would dare argue that. It's offense, and the defense puts them in trouble. And if the offense has a bad day, the defense isn't going to bail them out. All right? Pittsburgh, we know they're one-dimensional. You know, they're not playing complementary football right now. Tennessee Titans are not playing complementary to their own, within their own team. Cleveland Browns, no, not really. Ravens, nope. Dolphins, maybe, but at a much smaller level than the Buffalo Bills. All right, so this is why I'm excited to see this. It's not often that it's like this. Super Bowl champions all the time aren't the most complimentary teams. 2000 Ravens, 2015 Broncos.
Buccaneers.
Yeah, the Buccaneers are a perfect example of it. The 17, 18 Philadelphia Eagles that won, they were not a defensive mind. Defense did not do them any favors. You know, this is really spectacular, and I hope they continue to ride it out. There are, you know, some small. We don't know how small they are yet, but some injury concerns, of course. But you know, how could you not be happy right now watching this team play football? Even if you're not a fan, just watching this team just do good and hype each other up, and they're playing just great on both sides. And took us long enough to get to this point in the season, but they're doing it.
Yeah, Denver had another good, you know, defense, good pass rush. Not unlike the team we played last week, but also not unlike the team we played last week. Just as you and I spoke about after that game, we talked about the Bills outplaying opponents down the stretch, right? Which was a huge key to the rest of the season. Yep. That you and I discussed here on the Wagon Wheel podcast during the Bills bye week. And they did it again here. They had 29 touchdowns. They had 29 first downs to Denver's 19. We had 4 first downs due to penalties. We were 9-13 on third down efficiency, 534 total yards, 352 passing to Denver's 115, 8.2 yards per play to Denver's 4, 3-6 in the red zone. This is something you and I talked about last week versus 3-3 for Denver. That means we left 3 hanging. Right? You and I talked about that. We have those extra opportunities in the red zone. They looked a little bit better down there today, but that's something going into the playoffs that could be a difference maker, is capitalizing on those other 3 opportunities. Each team had a turnover apiece, and you know, the Bills just ran away with this one at one point. Like, things just kept going our way. And but that's why I wanted to mention that, is even though we still had those 3, maybe that could have gone a little differently in the red zone. Man, we capitalized on opportunities a lot of the game. There were some we didn't, but most of the time we did. And that was a huge difference today.
Most certainly. Like the penalties, you know, turnovers always obviously an important thing to, you know, you want to capitalize on. But, I mean, there wasn't an opportunity missed. Like, this team was constantly finding itself scoring. I'm not sure how many times they punted. They didn't punt much today at all. And that's a good thing.
Right.
That's an important thing. Finding the end zone or finding a field goal, just finding points somehow. It got to the point where they didn't even care. They're just like, oh, darn, we didn't get that touchdown because of penalties. We're just going to kick the field goal. It doesn't matter. Denver, you're not catching up. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, like I said, it was aside from the penalties, it was almost flawless football out there today. It really was for Buffalo. That's what it came off to me. There wasn't a moment in that game, even when the game started, all right, first quarter started, that I had any faith that Denver would make this thing competitive. The score was close at the end of the first half, but the actual how this game was playing out was much, much different than what the score showed. I can assure you that.
Yeah, I was wondering, I guess my biggest question going into this game, right? Like, we saw them handle not having John Brown well this time around instead of earlier in the season when they struggled, when he was out for a few games.
Yes.
We've seen the defense come back. That was a huge topic of conversation for us on the wagon wheel, was third quarter, what team are we going to look like on both sides of the ball? Second half, and even throughout the game, what's the defense going to look like? Because our defense had struggled to get going earlier in the season. The defense seems to have found their consistency, and we also are playing through the third quarter now. We're not showing those signs of shakiness on either side of the ball that we did prior to the bye week, so they appear to have made adjustments there. And the run game has been what we need it to, when we need it to be,
right?
For the most part, right?
Yeah, since
the
bye week. I've given up on a solid run game at this point. I honestly have. Like, I think it's the best way to do a balance, for an offense to operate. You've always been taught that. I've always been taught that the key to a good passing game is a really good run game. And if you can't run the ball, you can't be pass. And then, like, guys like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes are just, like, breaking all the rules. I'm okay with it at this point. It is what it is, you know. Bills are just never going to have that, like, de facto. It's going to be, and I'm sure Bills fans will hate this comparison, but I'm sure it's going to be like New England has done. It's not going to be a de facto RB1. They made out all right for it. Just do multiples, run by committee type deal where Singletary excels in some things that Moss doesn't, and Moss excels in things that Singletary doesn't. It's just, and in its own respective way, that's complementary football too, I guess. And if you really put the microscope on that aspect of this offense, that's complimentary in it as well. And that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, for salary cap reasons, I don't want a big star running back. I really don't. I'm completely fine down the line with bringing in guys, drafting rookies that have potential, and just stimulating the run game as best as they can through that. So, Bills don't need to run right now at this point. It's weird, to say that, it really is, but the way that Josh Allen's passing, the way that the receivers are catching, and the separation, I think that's the biggest thing too. The biggest difference from last year to this year is the separation that guys are getting. You know, I'd be interested to see some of the yards after catch that, like Stephon Diggs and, any of the receivers are having, but like Diggs, I know is I'm sure it's pretty interesting. Beasley as well. These guys are just, it's not just catch and drop, catch and get tackled. It's catch and go. It's really cool. It's really cool.
And it doesn't hurt, by the way. I mean, we sure have talked about it quite a bit. I think a lot of people have. It doesn't hurt that we have the passing game that we have this year, where they're able to run the ball situationally. And I think that was part of the struggle earlier in the season, is that those running backs weren't getting maybe the normal amount of reps that they would be getting.
True.
That first stretch of the season, because we were just throwing that ball so darn much with Stephon Diggs and John Brown out there, Beasley, of course. Some of our other offensive guys barely even saw the ball until later in, you know, the season because of it. And in a good way. I mean, that's what I mean, is they're playing it situationally. So I'm with you on that, I guess. I don't see they're running the ball, as long as they're doing it effectively and efficiently, and doing so situationally, doesn't concern me as much, as long as they're doing it, you know? And this week I figured we'd have a decent passing day, because Denver has had a corner shortage due to injuries. They've had guys out, and it kind of brings to mind some of the other teams where we've picked apart their secondaries a little bit, like the Jets or the Seahawks. Now, I didn't think it was going to necessarily be quite like those games, but I figured, hey, with a vulnerable secondary, suffice to say, we'll probably see a good passing day. And that's what happened. Diving into this thing, the first quarter, you know, when Denver got the ball first, they kind of just ran it, moved it downfield. They kind of attacked our run defense a little bit. So going into these last two games, looking ahead to the playoffs, that run defense, continuing to shore that up and strengthen that a bit, is probably a good thing to prioritize. Otherwise, the defense looked pretty good. You know, we got a tip ball on that drive that someone almost ran in and caught. We got a near pick by Levi Wallace on the last throw of that drive that resulted in the Broncos kicking the ball away. And then with 10-10 left in the first quarter, the Bills take over. So we show a good show on that first defensive effort. Allen goes right to Diggs on that first play on offense. He'd go back to him a few plays later after a Singletary first down, and Diggs would get one of his own and then some. And the defense would get to Allen on a 2-2 at the Denver 23rd. He'd fumble and recover, and on the next play, he'd throw a pick that wouldn't count, fortunately, on account of an offsides call in Denver at the line of scrimmage. But those two, like, you know, because of what we saw a little bit in the past, because of what we've seen a little bit, you know, even this season, those things, they kind of make you cringe just a little bit, like, oh no, I hope it's not going to be one of those games. So yeah, I'm glad it wasn't. You know, he settled down, hits Beasley, and, you know, Beasley had a game too, right? 843 yards for this guy in the season at that moment.
That's a career high for him. Yeah.
Oh, unbelievable, right? Yeah. And then Allen, you know, he takes off on a good run, keeps a throw alive on the next play, making a toss that gained a lot of notice kind of around, you know, viewers and national media and stuff like that, saying, wow, look at him keep this thing alive as he's going to the ground. And, you know, he had a big stiff arm in the next play before they line up in the red zone. He hits Dawson, knocks 9 yards for the first points of the game. 13 plays, 59 yards, 6:05 off the clock in possession time. Matt, what caught your eye? What stood out to you in this opening stretch in the first quarter of the game for the Buffalo Bills?
Again, it was poise. Like, Denver has a really good defense, and like, it's a very good defense, right? They are depleted most certainly, but it's just their poise. Like, they didn't care. They just attacked and attacked. It wasn't like this. It wasn't anything like really unique, right? It was just them being aggressive, them doing, playing football how they do. A big mistake a lot of teams make is playing to their opposing team's levels, and the Buffalo Bills don't play that game. They really don't. This is a nice little mix up, you know, you get some breaks with penalties, of course, but it didn't matter. They were aggressive, and that's the ultimate thing. That's what you want to see. That's what you want to see. You got to establish your dominance, right? Psych them out a little bit. You can start to see it was the next touchdown, but there's a little bit of fighting going. It's a little fighting going on over on the Denver Broncos sideline. That's how bad this Bills defense was picking, or this Bills offense was picking them apart. So, it's the aggressiveness. It's not like we're just going to run the ball up the gut. It's go, 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 go. Don't stop. And that's how you have to win this time of year. You can't leave it up to chance. The Bills were on the right end of it back in the early 90s. There's been plenty of times where teams have been on the wrong end of it in the postseason. You got to just keep going. You got to attack. You got to grind. Don't settle for checkdowns. Just be aggressive. And the Bills did exactly that here on this drive, on this, their first drive.
I was happy. I mean, it was one of those things where I like to see them kind of keep this rhythm going, I guess, that we're seeing on both sides of the ball since the bye week. And, you know, there's been a couple times since then, like in-game situations, where maybe something hasn't gone our way. And I wonder, hey, are we going to come out rattled, right? Like we saw happen against Tennessee, or times where we start to kind of lose our grip on the game a little bit. And that hasn't happened. That's something that's felt really good. And we've really done good also defensively at getting stops. That's what happened, you know, even on the next drive where Denver got the ball back, right? They'd end up missing a field goal and the Bills would get the ball back on their 1 yard line. So they even just holding teams where they have to kick, getting stops where they have to punt. And also on the second play of that offensive drive, when Allen got the ball back, he aired it out 40 yards downfield to Diggs. And unfortunately, you know, flag on the Broncos offense and Diggs stepping out of bounds, it wouldn't count. But even though we got the call on that flag, but you know, the I think the Denver defense was offsides on that one. But just that he was targeting Diggs early and often here, you know, in this game, he, Beasley, and Moss kind of helped the Bills offense chip away at Denver on this drive. He really lit up Stephon Diggs in this game, and Diggs had some big plays. And we're going to talk about it. He had an even bigger throw and Diggs had an even bigger catch later in this game. But when he caught, I'm sure you'll appreciate this as someone who's very familiar with Peyton Manning, as am I, you know, when he cocked it back and just aired it out downhill, Matt, I have been dreaming of this since the Bills drafted Josh Allen. I'm not kidding. I've just thought about when Peyton Manning came back from that career-threatening neck injury that, yeah, honestly, he was not expected to come back from. Those first two seasons in Denver, do you remember how he used to just come out with the offense and they would just rack up points on teams? They'd go up like 30, 40, you know, points in the score by halftime. And then Manning would just, they'd put in the backup like Osweiler or somebody and just let him play out, you know, the last quarter or two of the game, depending on how far they were up.
Yeah.
So see, take risks, I guess, like that, where he's at the point now where he feels comfortable throwing that far, like throws that big that we know he can throw arm strength wise, but he's got the accuracy and the confidence to do it. That's huge.
Yeah, we've always only had the arm strength, but it's the accuracy has always been the issue. But he's getting guys on the money right now. You know, just and like they're beautiful deep pass. Like these are like moment. Like you look back in the grand history of NFL, and you look up top 100 plays, and these are things that guys like Brett Favre and all these other players, they make like almost regularly, or they always do it in the moments you absolutely need them to. And Josh Allen started to do that. And that's why, like, you know, the last couple weeks I've been saying, you know, Josh Allen is playing the same level. He's doing all the good things and all the bad things that like these other MVP candidates and guys who've been around a long time, and these quote unquote elite level quarterbacks, depending on who you ask. He's doing the same things that they are doing. And you know, his advantage is he's 24 years old. So
that's right, man. That was just so encouraging to see that, right? At 24 years old, right? And taking chances, like being able to throw like that, make plays like that. You know, when they went into the second quarter here, he made several great throws sequentially, like back to back over three plays. It started on a third and four. Allen hits Diggs at the Buffalo 39 for the first down. Then he hits Beasley on the next play, 17 yards for another first down. Then back to Diggs, 15 yards and another first down. I noticed that throughout this game, he was hitting guys for like, you know, 15 to 22 yard tosses, where you're almost making up two first downs on the throw.
Absolutely.
And right. So I'm noticing these things, and you know how I get ramped up when Allen takes off with the ball and it's a good run. Like, I'm not talking about the risky ones. I'm talking about the good ones. Right.
Yeah.
Three plays later on third and four, Allen takes off for the longest run of his career, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
24 yards for the touchdown. He's a big boy, and he knows he has man-to-man downfield. Bills go up 14-0 in the game. That was a great Josh Allen Buffalo Bills offensive sequence there. So that was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't think it was a design. Obviously, I don't think it was a design run. I just think that he didn't like what he's seen, and he fit right in between the seams. He was out there just shifting his weight, and like a Lamar Jackson, like that's insane. Like it's, if I was on that defense, I'd be embarrassed. You know, I would be. 24 yards is a big, especially it was right up the gut too. It wasn't like this outside. It was right up the middle, and the defense was not ready for it. You know, I mean, obviously it was a good adjustment. And that's good decision-making too. That's what another thing we've been looking for with Josh Allen is good decision-making, when to run, when not to run, when to throw it, when to throw it out of bounds. And this is one of the better decisions, obviously, because it paid off, hit pay dirt. You know, 24 yards is a lot. That he doesn't do that often anymore. And that's, you know, that's good. That's good. Less is more. Less is more in a lot of things with life. Just life in general, less is more. So for him to, you know, to not run as much as he used to and then to go rip off this 24-yard run, good for them. Good for him. Good for him on that one.
Yeah, the Broncos, this might have been, looking back over just kind of the full scope of this thing, this next little run here might have been the Broncos' best of the day. They were trying to get back in this thing and making their way downfield on the next one, but would end up kicking the ball. Andre Roberts drops the catch in Denver.
Doesn't do that often.
Roberts, right? I think this something similar happened recently. I remember in a game you and I talked about after the fact. I think it was actually in the Steelers game where they got the ball back in favorable field position and they ended up making us pay for it. And that's exactly what Denver did here. They seized the opportunity on six plays. It ended with a Melvin Gordon touchdown on 3rd and 8. Denver gets back in this thing 14-7 with 6:28 left before the half. You know, Buffalo would get the ball back on a 29-yard kickoff return with them getting field position at their own 24-yard line, but Denver would hold us on defense. We'd actually end up kicking. I do want to give a shout out though. We got a 62-yard punt on that one from Bohorquez. That's a big boot. We have a couple kickers with big legs in Buffalo, man.
yeah, Bohorquez has had an interesting history too. He's not really the most fondly thought of punter. I've seen him do like 15, 20 yards and just get absolutely buried. So this is, I'm sure he was pretty happy about this. It was a beauty. It was a beauty. The punting game, got to respect it. You got to respect it. Not enough people put a respect on that punting game, but when things go wrong, they certainly hear about it, but this was good. This is a good one to acknowledge him doing right. So he absolutely buried Denver on their own side of the field.
I think he also had if I'm not mistaken, the longest punt of the year earlier this season. It was like a 72 yarder. So, you know, definitely still a work in progress and you're absolutely right about that, but still great to see there. That was kind of cool. You know, an illegal block by Denver's special teams would move them back further. You know, the Buffalo defense got a good stop there on this Broncos drive after the kick and made Denver kick it out of their own end zone. With 4:16 left in the second, and the Bills offense would get another crack at scoring before the half. You and I have both talked quite a bit this season about the importance of putting those points on the board going into the second half,
yeah,
and then adding to it, right? Like keeping the foot on the gas, adding to the score coming out in the second half. The first play of the drive, Allen went right back to Diggs, who juked two defenders to extend the play and get the first down. He hits Gabe Davis on the next play, who adds another first down. Then Allen would hit Dawson Knox in a big 27-yard toss for the longest play of the game that would also add 5 more yards due to a Denver penalty. Another beautiful – this also made national news, like, quickly, even though it got called back due to an offensive holding call on Ike Boeker. A beautiful fake throw. You heard me, like, just gush last week, right? About Josh Allen's fake off, like fake handoff and fake throwing ability. His fake handoffs are elite. Okay. Like his fake handoff game is amazing.
The sell is so important and he hit it. He hit it perfectly.
He hit him around the back handoff. Like that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. That's people don't understand how much goes into trick plays and there's a lot of acting involved. And oh my God, the defense was not ready for that. At all.
Yeah.
At all. Unfortunately, it did not count. You know, it was called back to the offensive line, but you got to give Josh Allen credit. You have, when you're a quarterback and you can sell things really well, sell fakes, that's important because that play looked like it was about to get blown up. I mean, they obviously knew what they were doing, they knew what the defense was doing to be able to shift it back that way, But yeah, that was a thing of beauty. It really was. It's unfortunate that it didn't have to count, or that it didn't count.
And Singletary ran it all the way, you know, into the end zone. That's what made it particularly painful. And we're going to hit on it right now because that unfortunately was not the end of the penalties that cost us potential scoring plays.
No,
on the very next play, an offensive interference call on a 13-yard pass to Diggs. That's rare. You don't usually hear that on Stephon Diggs.
No,
but then again. A penalty on the next play, a false start on Deion Dawkins. That's 3 consecutive penalties. It puts him at first and goal, but all the way back at the 30-yard line. Then, fortunately, on second and goal. Allen hits Jay Kumerow, who is, I believe, a practice squad call-up, on a 22-yard bullet for the touchdown. The 12th different player, by the way, that Allen's thrown a touchdown to this season. And the Bills go up 21-7 with less than 2 minutes to play. All I got to say about that last Denver drive, the next one, before we got to halftime, Buffalo got called for one of the more bogus play calls I've seen this season. I don't think it was as bad as the bogus interception call, the infamous bogus interception call earlier this season against the Rams. But a bogus roughing the passer call against Buffalo on that drive on second and six at the Buffalo 46 on a tackle by Matt Milano, 15 yards and a first down on the penalty. And it would give the Broncos field position in the red zone and they'd score a touchdown a few points later. Now, this game, fortunately, that would not ultimately factor into the final score. But at this time, you know, they would miss another field goal and make it 21-13. So now you have a game, right? Now it's a one-score game. So all I mean to say is that that seemed like a very odd call to keep, to stick with, even after being able to kind of maybe see it again on the big screen or, you know, take another look at it. I just couldn't believe it. But that, unfortunately, that was not the last of the questionable calls by officials in this game. But yeah, that one was a head-scratcher, Matt.
Yeah, just a little bit, and like I said, it unfortunately wasn't the biggest of deals. It didn't play a big factor. Usually, a lot of weird penalties do for Bills games. I'm not sure why. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but most certainly that was a little strange. But it did make things interesting for a little while. Interesting. Still not like complete, like confident, like still not unconfident in the Bills' ability to pull this game off, but it certainly did make things interesting. It was probably Drew Lock's best drive of his career. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with him. This is his first full year as a starter. I think he has potential, but I don't know.
I'll tell you what. With Denver's track record at quarterback, the most success they had was bringing a guy in from outside the organization by free agency.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that's true.
I don't have a problem with Drew Lock because, just to be frank, Jordan Palmer's working with him and that seems to have worked out great for us. So I'm willing to give him the benefit. Now I say the same thing about Sam Darnold as well. I think that, you know, whether it's with the Jets or whether it's with another team, that Sam Darnold has is somebody that can have a career as a starter in this league. So, you know, Drew Lock, he shows potential, right? He shows flashes and things like that at times, wins games at times. So, yeah, maybe. I mean, right now he looks like he could be.
I just got to remember where he's at in his career. But I was hoping for a little bit more. Like make it a little bit more competitive. I certainly was. Yep.
I thought he was going to be, honestly, and I was surprised too. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, especially after last week's game. Yeah, I thought he played a pretty good game. Granted, a much different team, but it was just hoping for a little bit more. But yeah, we got to remember where Drew Lock is in his career, and it's only his first full. So
he can't play offensive line or anything.
No,
like that,
he cannot.
So it's not. Yeah,
he cannot.
And look, I mean, hopefully he works out for them. You know, or if not, that they find the answer at quarterback, but hopefully he has a good career with the Broncos. But hey, you know, not every team can have the good fortune of drafting Josh Allen.
That is true.
His numbers at halftime, 16 of 23 with 176 yards passing, led the team with 32 rushing yards at the half, three total touchdowns. Next gen stat showed he was 12 for 16 throwing for 120 yards and two touchdowns when he wasn't under pressure. So that's pretty solid for a first half.
It certainly was. It certainly was. And it wasn't even the best. It wasn't even the best half of this game. It really wasn't. You know, going into the second half, the Bills just came out swinging. Like it was like watching an action flick where like the heroes backed into a corner. And like Lord of the Rings or something like that. And they would just start charging. They would just start charging. And they did. They most certainly did. It was really cool to come out hot. You know, I know we keep saying how they're playing better in the third quarter, but they're playing better in the third quarter right out of the gate. No waiting. Hit it excellent.
Roberts had that 53-yard kickoff return to set the pace.
Yeah, they didn't have very far to go. They didn't have very far to go, and they ended up driving 53 yards. They hit a little bit of Cole Beasley, a little bit of Josh Allen scrambling. Actually, a lot of Cole Beasley on this drive. Gabriel Davis, and then it ended with another little chef's kiss. Josh Allen running another one in, so which is really, really good. I think he almost has I forgot what the stat was exactly, but it's comparable to Cam Newton. Maybe he might be matching Cam Newton all time in rushing touchdowns. I could be over exaggerating. They did make a comment about him. He had some record that's like he's tied with somebody long term. That I can't remember the exact stat line, but again, it's like I said, that's a nice thing to have. And you know, I say often how the league is going towards a more mobile QB, not completely. Obviously, we're seeing, you know, Lamar Jackson struggles this year with being a mostly mobile quarterback. But this is the nice thing to have, all right? You know, just complete and utter pocket passers. They look like dinosaurs now. It's weird. it's very strange. Like me watching Philip Rivers in the pocket and then him trying to scramble, it's like, oh, I feel like I'm gonna have a heart attack because he's like I'm watching him run, and it's like it's not good. But when Josh Allen runs, it's like refreshing. It's like okay, he's got this thing. It's a valuable asset to have. It really truly is, and it obviously it is working. Yeah. It's working. They pull off another touchdown and Tyler Bass did an extra point.
28-13 Buffalo. And now it's up to the defense, right? We talked about that all throughout the season, but they seem to have bounced back after the bye week. It's up to them now to see what adjustments they'd make in the second half to see if they could continue to put pressure on. And then soon enough, like sure enough, like right away, Trey White swoops around and into the back of the pocket and sacks Drew Lock on the ensuing Denver drive, knocking the ball loose on the ground. Jerry Hughes recovers it and jukes multiple defenders. Juking machine, 21 yards to the house, 35-13 Bills. Buffalo now has defensive touchdowns in consecutive games for the first time since 2016. We get two touchdowns in 17 seconds of game clock in this one. It's the second touchdown of Hughes' career. And the Broncos, I mean, the Broncos are the only team in the NFL with at least one turnover a game this season.
Right.
But Trey White, you know, who got the sack, he tweeted a fun post after the game. He said, just call me Bruce Smith Jr. now.
I've seen that. Yeah, Drew Lock didn't even see him coming. Like, that's how like elusive that play was. And it's Trey White. He's a cornerback. And on a pass play, he's blitzing in from the outside. Like, he read that perfectly. That's very good situational awareness, very good football IQ. And, yeah, he came in, and Jerry Hughes looking like Barry Sanders out there, shucking and jiving into the end zone. And that was really cool. He almost got my player of the week, Nat. If he did a little bit more, I probably would have gave it to him. But a really cool moment that Jerry Hughes can hang his hat on at that. Yeah, that was a very good defensive stand. Like, that's because right now the score is 28-13. There's still a chance. All right, this is before Jerry Hughes touchdown and the turnover. There's still a chance for Denver to make this thing competitive. They're not completely out of it, but once that hit, like that was it. Like the wind was just completely taken out of their sails from a emotional standpoint. This Denver team had just nothing, absolutely nothing, and like. Even on the next drive, they go negative 2 yards and punt it away. Like that's not a good way. That's not a good way to respond at all.
You're taking yourself out of the game a little bit. And to the Bills' credit, Matt, this was my favorite part of the entire game is that this sequence. Okay. That turnover, the Trey White sack, Jerry Hughes recovery runs it back for the touchdown. They get the quick stop on a short Denver drive, punt it away. And then Allen on the first play, when they get the ball back, throws a 55-yard bomb to Stephon Diggs from the Buffalo 32 to the Denver 13. That this is like the type of momentum that I loved seeing on both sides of the ball. that I think I've been waiting all season, like just with anticipation for, and just hoping to see on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, no, it's momentum is a very real thing. People don't like to talk about it, but it's like, oh, how is this team? How are we gonna one up the other side of the ball? That's what it honestly felt like. Like, oh, how's the defense gonna one up the offense on a drive? Like, it felt like they were just bullying Denver, and that's why. I mean, I was saying it was such a dominant performance, and the Bills have had a few of those where, you know, this year and I think in recent weeks that, like, complimentary football, and it's working. It's working very well. You know, yeah, they hit it. No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it said after that 54, the hits the on the next, you know, the 55 yard pass to Diggs. It's, you know, not bad. But I do appreciate the fact that, you know, that Buffalo is still going for it. They do get, it's a turnover on downs, but I appreciate that there's the aggressive play calling, at this point. Okay. They're like, oh, we're all right. You know, we got this under control. And I think aggressive play calling even short yardage, because it was only a fourth and one. It wasn't very far. That's the direction the NFL is going, right? Analytics is pointing towards going for it on fourth and one. And they were at the Denver 4 yard line too. So like it was close. What's a field goal going to do for you at this point, except for being an extra rep and maybe tack on a few points that really won't matter in the long run. So that's something I was looking for, you know, again, I'm sure the listeners hate it, but like Frank Reich in Indianapolis has been calling plays to keep going on fourth and one, no matter what side of the field it's on. And it's working. It's working effectively. The stats are there. The stats provided that, you know, if you do certain things, you know, things a certain way, you're going to move the chains on a fourth and one. And I'd like to see the Bills continue to kind of go that they do punts. They don't have to punt as much as they need to, but they are quick to kind of go like, just kind of like, oh, we'll just punt it away. Good field position or defense will win us the battle. And that's okay. But I, you know, that might be one little extra, just a little extra cherry on the top. If they just try to extend some of these fourth and short plays.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you about. Like, that specific sequence, because I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that, is what do you think about them going for it on the fourth and one? But more specifically, the other thing I'm curious to ask you, what do you think about the play call? Because I'm sitting there watching this, and you know, here's I'd say on a broader scale, like, you know, looking ahead throughout the remainder of the game, I mean, it's not like the stakes are that high on this. They can get away with going for this. You know, Denver has to start, even if they get the ball back, they have to start from their own 4 yard line. And if the Bills defense gets another stop, we get the ball back with potentially good field position.
Yeah.
So I think I would have rather have seen maybe a quarterback sneak on that play, or just something with the bigger body, you know, just to kind of put it across.
Yeah. But I'm rewatching it. Yeah. I like the call. The one thing though, that Moss doesn't, indeed didn't, it's kind of tough. He didn't like, I don't know. He leaned a little bit, but I don't think like enough to, he didn't, right. He didn't extend. And that was probably the biggest issue. Cause there was, I felt like there was enough space for him to make something happen. And I personally think Zach Moss was obviously the better running back choice in that sort of situation. But yeah, if he just would have extended just a little bit, not too much where the ball was unprotected, but he didn't really get a lean going, like a head first kind of thing going, until a little bit too late, and they just brick walled them. They were ready for it. Runs up the middle are tough. But I agree that you brought up the point of the quarterback sneak, because it's Josh Allen. he's a goon. You just reach over. All he has to do is reach over, and that's it. You know, and he could probably get a little something out of it. So maybe he's seen something that we didn't. You know, I don't understand, you know, completely understand reading defenses. Obviously, I'm not an NFL player, but I think Josh Allen would have definitely done that. Could have been a test for Moss too. It could have been a situational test for Moss.
You know what? I just thought of this. I wonder if maybe because Moss got benched. Remember, he had a couple fumbles,
yes,
or just a couple times where he lost the ball. I wonder, you know, it seems like he's worked out whatever it is. He's holding on to it. He's not continuing to have that problem. But I wonder, being a first-year running back in the NFL who just had a couple, like in a game where he ended up getting benched for not taking care of the ball, running into traffic like that, if that factored into not maybe taking any risks as far as extending or anything like that.
Right.
So, but I think you're right about putting the big body in there, you know, reaching over, going for it might've worked out better, but
might've been too easy. Know. Might've been too easy. Right. Why make things too easy? but like you said though, like they obviously trusted their defense. They weren't too worried about it at this point, score wise. Denver only goes 3 yards again on three plays. Like, that's pitiful. That's pitiful. I do want to say this, like, Denver is, like, I think they're a pretty good defensive team. I really do. When they have all their pieces in play, I think they're a pretty good defensive team, but their offense holds them back. Like, it really does. It reminds me of I might have said it before. They remind me of the Bills a couple years ago. I think the Bills had much better personnel, but, you know, I think their defense does play pretty well, and they can't hang with the best of them. But yeah, it's crazy to think that though this team just took Kansas City to the limit a couple weeks ago, and Buffalo smacked them around today. Buffalo gets the ball back after that punt. They don't have to go really too far. They get a 20-yard pass from Allen to Cole Beasley. The workhorse continues. Another hit. He hits Cole Beasley again for 4 yards. A nice 16-yard pass to Stephon Diggs. And they get a little bit of, you know, unnecessary roughness penalty that goes their way. And, was it offset? No, it wasn't offsetting. My apologies. In a little 8-yard run, another 10-yard penalty. This is the one. No, it was the second one. That's how crazy this drive was. There was the second one. How many times do we got to score? Yeah, that's right. How many times do we got to score? Josh Allen said. It was the funniest thing. Very quotable moment.
Denver, like, what are we doing? You know, like one of those moments. I do want to say, I noticed the Broncos looked shaky.
No confidence at all in them.
Right. On all points, they kind of seemed to understand that this thing was getting away from them, and they just looked shaky after we started getting way ahead. And even after that pass to Diggs, that 16-yarder, the Bills had like 16 plays on 157 yards and 7:37 of game clock time of possession just in the third quarter. So the Denver offense isn't even spending enough time on the field to really get something going and really start to kind of get back in a groove. They just continue to look shaky.
Yeah. And think about that, you know, you say that, like, think about that defense who can't stay off the field. How are they going to do you any good if you can't extend drives, if you're going three and outs in every play? You can't do that. That just does more harm to your defense, and we see that time and time again. But, yeah, so
– those Bills calls you mentioned, go on. I mean, you called it, right? The Lee Smith touchdown gets called back on a Buffalo offensive pass interference. Some really poor calls by the officials in this game. Two plays later, Allen hit McKenzie for a touchdown. That got called back for an illegal formation call. so they'd end up settling for a Tyler Bass field goal. But fortunately, we're up 38-13. So, you know, the 25-point lead helps. But this is the tale that you and I have been telling, how the penalties have been costing the Bills.
No, most certainly has. Like, the score, it would have been in the 50s if they, you know. But honestly, it's scary to think. It's honestly scary to think about. So after the Tyler Bass 27-yard field goal is good, Denver punts it after going 14 yards in six plays. Buffalo answers back. We're going to go down and drive. We're going to do what we want again. Zach Moss opens up the drive with a 9-yard run. Then he opens up the he continues to open up the drive with a beautiful 26-yard run. One of the longest rips I think Zach Moss has had this season. It's good to see. Like I said, I'm okay with not having a strong running game, but when called upon to have a strong performance, to get stuff done, that's the kind of run that I want to see. Right. And that's partially offensive line. That's partially just Zach Moss's vision, awareness. They use him again. He goes 6 yards. So in three plays on this drive, he goes, let me see if my Niagara Falls math serves me right. 41 yards. Oh, 42. He took off for, he did another one, a little, nice little 1 yard run. And then Josh Allen hits Cole Beasley for 27 yards. Devin Singletary gets some reps. He goes 1 yard. Moss hits another, goes another 10 yards. He got a big chunk of his yardage on the day in this, yeah, in this drive. 10 yard run here. 1 yard run, 2 yard run. Like this is all him. This whole drive was familiar. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Does this sound exactly like the fourth? Here we are in the fourth quarter. This sounds just like last week against the Steelers, right?
It does.
You get in that last stretch in the fourth quarter, we start game time management. They ran the ball 9 times on a 12-play drive on this.
7 minutes, 46 seconds a clock.
Brilliant. Like, it was beautiful. It was just, it was fantastic.
That's how you do it.
And then they had a pass field goal to go 41-13 with under 6 minutes to go. This is like Christmas early for me. I mean, we're up. I was said to my dad, we were watching the game. I turned to him and said, I'd love to score over 40 points in this game. That would be just great. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, well, that's probably it, right? Like, we're probably good. We're just going to ride out, you know, run the ball for rest of the fourth quarter. Denver, you know, they came back, made a 12-play, 75-yard, 3-minute, 54-second drive, complete with a fumble recovery for a touchdown and another missed field goal to make it 41-19. That guy, by the way, the guy Russellino was an XFL player that got brought in to fill in for the kicker for Denver. If you're listening, wondering why you missed a few of those. And they go for the onside kick to try and at least compete and not go down without a fight.
Yeah.
But Micah Hyde reels it in. Matt Barkley comes in the game to finish this thing out. And on the first play, hands it off to Devin Singletary, who goes 51 yards right in for the touchdown and another bass field goal. And we're up 48-19.
Yeah, Barkley didn't have to do a lot. And I do have to acknowledge this. This should have happened. Them pulling starters should have happened at the top of the fourth quarter.
I thought so too.
This is one of my keys to victory this week is for this Bills team to come out unscathed. And they didn't. They didn't. They may have won this game, but there's concern with Trey White right now. I'm not sure what the injury report is, but he was down on the ground for a long time. Stephon Diggs, he did get carted back on the field, but he did get carted off as well. There were some other health issues. That concerns me. That, like, player health right now at this point for Buffalo should be number one. And I honestly, if it doesn't mean anything in week 17, don't play the starters. Give them a quarter. Just don't play the starters. I don't care what it means for Miami. If it means Miami getting the postseason, whatever, good for them. This team's ambitions are a lot bigger than just holding other teams down at this point. You know, I just like the top of the fourth quarter, Barkley, all these backups should have been in the game. It's not worth it at this point. It really isn't. So this.
You made a great point, Matt, when you were talking at the beginning of the fourth quarter, you talked about how much they ran the ball on that first drive, nine times on 12 plays. I think you're right. Barkley could have executed that.
Yeah, there's no point. Like, why risk Josh Allen? Why put him in a weird situation where something goes wrong? You could lose him. And I think there might have been an occasion where he got like hit by somebody. I think that one of the last drives that they went downfield on, he got tackled, like somebody like steamrolled right through his legs, and like that's lucky. Josh Allen's got strong legs and looks good in shorts and all that jazz, but that's risky business. It's risky business. It's honestly,
yeah, that's very true.
You have to be careful. You know, if something would have happened, there would have been a lot of questions for Sean McDermott. If something happened to Josh Allen at that point in the game when they're up 20 points, there would have been some questioning of Sean McDermott. You know, just why? But you know, Diggs looked to be okay. We don't know what the injury what happened, but getting carted off is scary. And I haven't heard any updates on Trey White yet. So,
yeah, I was thinking about it.
He seems to be in good spirits. If he's calling himself Bruce Smith Jr., he's probably okay. But we don't know. But it's like, what do you do? Like, you got the division locked up at this point. There's a chance you could jump Pittsburgh, but at what cost right now? Like, you're not getting an extra bye. What? I mean, maybe home field advantage throughout, you know, until you reach KC on the other side, maybe. But is it like, is it really worth it right now? Home field advantage is pretty much a myth at this point, with no fans at all. So I wouldn't even care about having to do an extra road game. I honestly really wouldn't. Not at the risk of player health. Just cool them off, you know, let them rest. Don't let them get too cold. Let's see. Oh, let's see. I just got an update. McDermott had no news on Stephon Diggs' foot injury, but the team believes it's not serious. So that's a good sign.
That's great news. Yeah, that's fantastic news. As I was thinking about it after the game, Matt, my only closing thoughts were in regards to the time frame that we have now between this game and the Patriots, who are our next matchup on Monday Night Football. We get a 9-day break. And I'm excited about having that extra window of rest for our players, especially with a handful of guys healing up from injuries, as well as those that got dinged up a little bit today. You know, looking ahead at these final two games, the stakes are, as you said, we could surpass the Steelers potentially for that number two seed.
Yep.
Depending on how things shake out for them and depending on how things shake out for us. We also, even though it would take two losses by the Chiefs, and we'd have to win out the rest of the way, for us to have a shot at that first seed. So it's possible, but we might end up going into that last game in 2 weeks against Miami not needing to take unnecessary risks. We might go into that next game, you know, depending on how things shake out with the Steelers and Chiefs, where if we are not going to be affected by the outcome of that game in terms of the standings, or, you know, it also could affect Miami because Miami currently has a playoff spot thanks to the wild card. But if the Patriots win out their final few games, they take that spot, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And so I would anticipate, or at least I picked the Patriots to win against the Dolphins tomorrow, given Bill Belichick's sterling record against rookie quarterbacks. But we'll have to wait and see. We could end up in that game where, you know, maybe we let Barkley and some of the practice squad guys and people who don't normally get as much playing time, you know, some of the rookies, some of the backups, younger guys, things like that, get them out there and get them some playing time. But other than that, you know, I think we'll have to just wait and see, but I'm with you on not taking any unnecessary risks and getting whatever rest we can for guys if it's there ahead of the playoffs.
I'll be honest. I think it ultimately depends on Colts and Steelers the day before, Sunday at 1 o'clock. I think if the Colts beat the Steelers, the Bills should seriously consider maybe playing their starters for a half of football for Monday night. It's Monday Night Football. Who gives a damn? who cares? Who really cares? It's against the Patriots. Like, whatever, you know, you already beat them once. It just, you know, I'll tell you what,
we're at 11-3. If we win next week, even if we lose the final one, I'll at least have gotten the win part of the record part right, my preseason prediction. So
that's true. I'm
enthusiastic. Yeah, and I like our chances against New England too.
No, most certainly so. Yeah, I mean, who knows how they're going to come out? It's the Patriots. They're strange and they're respective ways. But yeah, I think if the Colts beat the Steelers next week, I think in the Bills, you know, the Bills could probably have their way with the Patriots. I wouldn't play starters in week 17. I just wouldn't even bother. Even if it means Miami making the postseason, I wouldn't even bother. I just let it go. So, but yeah, everybody, that is a wrap. Is there any final notes you wanted to make before we close this episode out, Dave?
I just wanted to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, Matt. I know we're going to talk to them before the new year and connect here on the Wagon Wheel podcast, but I just wanted to say Merry Christmas to you, Matt. Merry Christmas to our listeners. And
Merry Christmas to you, buddy.
At Bills Wire. And congratulations to Bills Mafia and the organization on winning the AFC East and bringing that back home to Buffalo. It feels good to be in that position and a Bills fan right now. So, you know, thank you. Thank you, Buffalo Bills, for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, everybody, that is a wrap. Enjoy your NFL action this Sunday. enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy your Christmas, your Hanukkah, whatever you may, whatever your belief is. You enjoy it. Happy holidays to you. And until next time, go Bills.
Go Bills.